I thought I would start with this scene from Jesus of Nazareth. This is the close to the eighth day after Jesus was born on the 25th, so it'll probably be tomorrow. And this is, he goes in for the circumcision for Bris.
I'm gonna turn it up.
And I love this scene because it shows Simeon responding to the baby's cry. If you remember, Simeon is outside. I think he was told by God that he would not pass away before the Messiah had come.
Rise, clothed in light. The light has come, and the glory of the Lord shines over you. For though darkness covers the earth, and dark night the nations, the Lord shall shine upon you.
Come. I promise. Everything will be done the way we agreed.
Them.
Don't worry. I promise. Come.
Moshe.
And the Lord said to Abraham, keep my alliance and circumcise each child born unto Israel on the eighth day of his life.
Amen.
This is the seal in flesh of the covenant between the Lord and his people. And the child shall be called
His name shall be Jesus.
And the nations of the world shall march towards...
Where is he? Now I can die contented, Lord. According to thy word. I am Simeon, an old man who has waited long to see his salvation. And now my eyes have seen the child who will bring the salvation thou hast prepared before all people, a light of revelation to the Gentiles, and the glory of thy people, Israel. And a sword shall pierce your heart.
Yeah, I love that scene. Beautifully done. Circumcision is a strange thing. It's a mark, certainly. There's some health benefits. Some of the kosher things are health benefits, too, so it might just be that simple. But it does mark them, especially in those days. No one else would have had that done.
If you don't have running water, it's definitely a health benefit.
Oh, yeah. Michelle's saying if you don't have running water, it's definitely a health benefit. Even more so, especially in a desert country like that. You know? I've just been thinking of Mother and David on these nights, how much Mother loved this, and I know David did.
Larry, would you read what you wrote when you sent out the... That was so nice.
Okay, thank you, Samuel. Yeah. Dear friends, we are going to have our yearly New Year's Eve meditation tonight at our house on Camino Island. Mother Hamilton started this tradition in the 1960s, and David continued it through his years of service to us. It allows us to avoid the issues of being around alcohol and more worldly parties, and to emphasize the spiritual aspects of all things that we do. Mother wanted us to be optimistic about the coming year and to start the year joining into society with a renewed sense of hope and enthusiasm. She wanted the celebration to point the way towards those goals. During the evening, I will give a short talk, etc., etc. And then we will listen to a video of Swami Satchitananda. I found it, and it's got subtitles on it now, too, that we're still working to finish and to polish because there's a few mistakes in it. So, yeah, that's the short, long and the short of it. But Mother definitely, it was a surprise to me when I first, I'm sure for you too, Peter, that Mother would do something like that, have a 4-hour meditation and time to get together and then to ring in the new year. And all of us living in the secular world, or the world of America, certainly didn't do anything like that on New Year's Eve. That was definitely a time for drinking and revelry, but it's interesting how Mother changed that. But she had some trouble in her family, her with alcoholism, and she knew how bad it was in so much of society. So she thought it would be a good thing to do. And it certainly kind of separates the men from the boys as to who was really dedicated to the spiritual path, and to stay away from that world is not a bad thing at all. And I don't know, probably some of you do, but what Master did on for New Year's Eve, if he had a meditation, I can't imagine that he didn't, but I don't know the details. And I know I've read it over the years, but if anyone wants to weigh in on that from their own memory or from what they can read, that'd be great. And the next thing is January 6th is the Epiphany. And that's now become a term that we use to reflect or to think about or to explain a ecstatic experience. To have an epiphany about something is to come to understand something that you hadn't before. But it's represented in the Bible by the coming of the Magi. The kings, the three kings. I was just listening to a YouTube video about this recently, and I guess there is no mention of them being kings, and there was no mention of them being three, but there was three gifts. So we've all come down in history to, we have this colloquial understanding of Christmas, and so different than when you actually read. Well, I think it's Matthew and Luke who have a birth story, and they don't exactly agree. And the animals, the shepherds were there the first night on one of the recounting, and the Magi came, 8 days or, well, almost 10 days later, more than that, 12 days later on the 6th of January, as counting from the 25th. And so some of these stories that are slightly different, they just add them together. And where they differ completely, say something opposite or something that contradicts the other, then they just meld it into a seamless story. And of course, these are valuable stories for our culture, for people to think about the higher teachings that are reflected in these mythologies and these stories. And to have faith that the stories that are told are true to God and not necessarily true to history. Mother was the first person I ever heard say something like that, that she didn't know that Jesus really existed in the way he's described. That man himself described in the Bible is probably entirely a mythological, structure or mythological character, mythological idea. And historical things, people shouldn't get too wrapped up on, as we, and I know I talk about a lot, but we really do have to look at the higher truth and to look at the truth itself as dressed in a parable and not get too constrained about which of the two Gospels is more accurate about what really happened. But to take it all in, just to absorb this thing. You know, when I was first with Mother, I just simply had no critical mind in front of her or around her. She was speaking of things that were way beyond my understanding. But also, I just had that faith. I know many of you also, others have talked about meeting her and having something similar, where your judgmental mind or your critical mind basically just separates from your normal conversation or your normal internal dialogue. You just, it isn't that you have absolute faith, you but it's not so different to say that you just don't have any doubt. So it's a new, more neutral position to be in mentally. But you learn to just absorb. And of course, reading books and reading things. And I love these great movies that have been made. They're trying to get us to contemplate. We can start at the history. I think the historical, the idea that it's a historical, reflects reality doesn't take anything away from the story and the marvel that you feel around it. But that, and you know, all Christians know that there's deeper levels to all these stories. And so we also are taught that there's even deeper levels than that, and there's levels that we can't understand. But at least Mother certainly revealed many things about the deeper mythological stories. What's interesting too about Mother is that she brings in the Eastern ideas of the chakras and 12 apostles and all those kinds of things and the numerology of the Bible. She sees it just reflected differently than even the mystical Christians do in this Western culture, who don't take it historically accurate, but and do look at the mythology and do look at it. And I'm not sure to say that they're at a lower level than Mothers, but you know, my interest is always been when I started on this spiritual path was at least on the, you know, the path with Master. It had a heavy Hindu component. So I was so thrilled to see Mother's insights that she didn't throw or didn't push away from anything that Master was teaching at all. She accepted his teachings and she added to it and gave more nuance and more detail. Mother said that he couldn't, even if he did know what she had been revealed to her, which he likely could have, but he couldn't teach it from his time period where he was when he was living. It was would not be accepted, and he was trying to be polite in a Western Christian society. He didn't do anything just to shock. Though there's many stories around him that show that he was very strong and strong-willed and was willing to buck the some of the teachings in the West that he felt were really wrong. There's the story of Master telling a man who had come to him with to get help about his son not being well behaved. And Master told him what you can do is you can get a friend and you can tie up your son and you can get a roaring hot oven or stove and an oven and throw him in. And that will teach him. The man was appalled, of course. And Master said, you know, that's what you're expecting us to believe. So he was not afraid to say these kinds of things. This is not a father. This is not God that we would really want to know or be, you know, allow us to be burnt like that, be in pain forever and ever. These are silly control ideas, you know. They're extreme ideas to get a child to behave, the boogeyman or whatever it is. Mother says that the birth, Bethlehem is the house of bread, and the stomach, behind the stomach is a conical-like cave, or remember anyone remember her term?
That's a cave.
Yeah, Okay, a conical-like cave in behind the stomach. That is where the birth of the Christ occurs. Now, these are complicated things because Mother says that there's pineal and pituitary glands secretes some fluids and that they form a seed every 29 and a half days, which is exactly one true month. Astronomically, the moon is exactly in the same spot in the cycle at 29 and a half days. So she was in this course, the menstrual cycle is close to that. And it varies a lot, but it still is around that seems to be associated with the word month. And this would happen on a regular basis is kind of astonishing. That the seed is formed and it's expelled because of the sex force. Mother says that Herod is, you know, she's implying that Herod is successful in his, you know, killing all the children because the seed is killed along with Herod's. But if instead the seed is brought down to the base chakra, which is Egypt in the mythological understanding that Mother teaches, that this base chakra is a place of hiding. And until the passions have died. And in the Bible, Herod dies, and he represents the passions. And once the passions have subsided and died, then you can return home. And he does after that. Comes back up the spine. And then proceeds on the circuit up through the spine, the spinal centers. Each spinal center representing a deeper understanding in preparation for realization, for self-realization, for God-realization. So, you don't really know, but many people are born and only get up through the first, second, third chakra, perhaps. And the first divine chakra is the heart center. And when you go through that Gordian knot and you have that kundalini energy pushed through that and you gain the height of view from the height of that higher spinal center, you enter into the world of the divine and you then can comprehend divine ideas and the idea of divinity itself. That God in man exists and that we are that. Now we are that. I am he. Those are higher experiences, but it begins then. We are then knowledgeable of the divinity of the spiritual realm. And we are given that access to that understanding through these experiences within. Now, what's so interesting about the East is with this idea of Kundalini, and David talked to and Mother too, to many people, and they didn't know anything about it in India. But the teachings are there, and there are certainly masters that have had these experiences in India. And if you talk to the right now, you can be knowledgeable. So Mother did meet Swami Muktananda, who was the disciple of Nityananda from Canon God from Kerala. And he was a Siddha yogi. Also, he'd had tremendous Kundalini experiences. And so he talks about it. There are those who do talk about it. But she didn't meet many who did. And David said he didn't meet any, if I remember right, who were conversant on the subject. So Mother talks about these great experiences, these epiphanies, these ecstatic experiences. And she tells us this is also due to things happening in the Bible, in the body. The body has a factory, a chemical factory, a neurological structure, physical structure. And this is fully manifesting through all of those aspects of the body. Heat and, you know, baptism of, I'm going to talk about baptism of blood and the water and of fire, And these are different experiences that occur on the way up the spine. Now, who in the Christian world would think about that from that point of view? But yet it's a well-known and well-established series of teachings, or type of teachings around Kundalini. That is part of the teachings of India. They didn't invent it just to explain to the Westerners what's going on. It's something that they've been aware of and teaching for many, many years. Even though it's a lost art, each person who goes through it can learn it and teach it. And usually there's masters all controlling all of this. There's masters living today and living at all times. God never abandons us. He's always with us in some form. Another talk that's quite unusual is the idea of the Eucharist coming from the throat, and the idea that it actually is a real event, it's a real thing, and that it probably, she thought, that there were people in the early Christianity who were taught this and had this experience that she did. But she explains it one time, and she said that it was like a lozenge coming out of her throat, and that she put it into her hand, to the palm of her hand, and there was one perfect drop of blood in it as she broke it in half. And that this occurs at the 5th century, from what I can understand. She says the energy comes in through the back of either the back of the neck or the medulla. So I'm sorry, I don't know the details here. But I've heard her talk about it one time. And I believe we've heard it in a talk in recent years that we've heard about this. And that it occurred to her that it came, this energy, this force, pushed it out of her throat. I know I talk about this, but for those of you who haven't heard it, she said it's like a styrofoam, like a piece of styrofoam. And that the Catholics have the host is made from unleavened bread, and it's made in a way that's made in mass production into circles of like a disc of plastic. But it's like styrofoam. It literally is. It melts on your tongue when you put it in, because it's just bread and water, or just wheat and water. And since it's unleavened, I'm not sure, it may be salt. I'm not sure there's anything else put in it. But at any rate, I always found that very interesting that Mother described what she held in her hand to be like a styrofoam capsule, and how similar that is to the Catholics' notion of what the Eucharist is. Further to that is the idea that Jesus saying, "This is my body, this is my blood." Now, this capsule is the remnants of the seed that's gone through the circuit. And so my understanding, Mother never said this, but it seems to follow that it's a cast-off aspect of the seed. As the seed, the true seed, in other words, the ego and the body are cast off at that center in preparation to go through the 6th center. So at the Last Supper, we have Jesus saying, talking about this Eucharist, talking about the bread and the wine. Now, I looked this up once, and it is all through the Bible, unleavened bread, most of the time talked about. In the Orthodox Church, these are just details, you might find them interesting. In the Orthodox Church, they use leavened bread as representing the Eucharist. And in the Catholic, certainly Catholic and probably the Lutheran and the what's the one in England?
Anglican,
thank you, Kate. The Anglican Church probably still have these things in the same similar fashion. But that in the Bible, it actually does say unleavened, and that Jesus is the leavening. Now, this is a mythological, mystical approach to understanding the scriptures for the Christians. They play with these ideas. They know it's a mystical experience. But that it is a... it is a preparation for going through the sixth center, because it means that you've come through the fifth center. And now you can cast off. That which is not needed anymore. It's an idea. But it is part of the circuit coming up. And we know that this seed continues in a different form, probably, if I'm right on this. This is sermons. That it is goes through the sixth center, shorn of all things except the knowledge of God, with an unerring pointing through the sixth center. Knowing exactly which way to go. And so I'll say what I've said before, that I think David, when he, somewhere in the late 90s, early 2000s, probably his, it was completed with his year of silence. We just don't know for sure, but many of us here believe that that's when David experienced. And my own experience around him, being with him at that time, was he seemed to be different inwardly, because my own connection to him changed inwardly. Outwardly, he looked the same and felt the same, although more quiet. Even before he went into silence, he was changing. And in the year of silence, I should say. And there seems to be that when this is, when you get to that, through the fifth center, and you enter into the higher plane, going through the causal body, going outside the causal body through the sixth center, that then you have full realization, going over the top. Take a short break for like 5 or 10 minutes here, and probably start just after the hour at 9, and then we'll play. I'll play that video of my interview with Swami Satchidananda. I think we played it a few years ago. Not sure if we had the subtitles then, but anyway, it's good to listen to again, even with me coughing and other interruptions of Swamiji's thoughts. There's a few times though, David and I talk about this one time when we were first watching it, that I interrupted him at one time. That was very fruitful, because I asked him, and you'll hear it, but I asked him, what was Papa doing when Mother was going through her one of her worst travails, when she was trying to grab his feet and was might have tripped Papa if she had clung to his feet too much. And Swamiji had to step in and lift her away. But I asked Swamiji at that very point, I interrupted his thoughts. And I said, what was Papa doing? And Swamiji said, he was smiling. Now, I think that's an important piece of information, and I'm glad I got it from him. I think in the future, we'll just let him talk. I'll put my questions in written form. But anyway, it's fun. you know, I haven't done many interviews and I'll say I'm not fully, but it is a little bit, you'll see. It's worth the what's going on here though with Swamiji and his, going back in his memory is really important. So really nice to see his face and listen to him talk about mother in the way that he does. So we'll do that in about 5 or 10 minutes. Okay, we're back. So this is February 6, 1996, in Nanjing.
Swamiji, I have been reading the gospel. And I'd like to start with a question regarding Mother when she first came here. You told me the other day that Papa was very excited when the Hamiltons were coming. And that, of course, they were coming from a long distance. And when they got here, Mother was in a, almost, you said, in a state of ecstasy. Can you explain that at all? Just traditional ways of showing that, or did she seem to be in an altered state?
Is it on now?
Yes.
When Papa and Mataji got the news from Mother Hamilton about their coming here, he was very much excited, actually, and he was looking forward for their visit. He had made separate arrangements for their stay. 2 rooms were allotted for them, and he had even planned how much time he would be able to spend with them, and so on and so forth.
Oh, I wondered. Because in the book, he says at 8 o'clock, then he goes to see the Hamiltons, yes. And then...
When they actually arrived, she embraced him. And it was a very grand welcome. Both of them were taken to the room. Of course, all these have been mentioned in the gospel itself. And the very day they started talking on spiritual matters, she was so anxious that she should not return home without realizing God. Her only aim in coming to India was to realize God. She wanted to have it at any cost. She was hammering on this point very now and then. And Papa was assuring her that she would get the experience. And discussion went on for some days. The question, they used to meet in the mornings in their rooms, and in the afternoon, they would come to Papa's room for 1 hour, 1.5 hours. They would discuss various matters. Sometimes Papa would read from some book and explain the highest state of realization. She would say she had passed through various experiences but had not reached the highest and wanted Papa's help to reach the highest. She wanted, in due course, an assurance from Papa that she had reached the goal. But Papa was avoiding a direct answer to that. He was telling her again and again, "You are the universal mother. What is there for you to realize? You are everything. You are beyond everything." That, of course, made her very happy, but at the same time, Father used to taunt her. "That is the way Papa looks at every woman. Nothing special for you. So that doesn't show any great attainment for you." So she would again ask Papa, "Papa, isn't the way you address all women? I am not any special for you." "Yes, you are special, no doubt." that way discussions used to go on. She wanted assurance from Papa, and Papa was avoiding it for a long time.
She said that Papa would give her no quarter. He gave no quarter that now makes sense to me why she said that.
That's right. After some months, she showed signs of sort of restlessness. Though she was talking about God only, she was not talking the normal way. We were a little worried about it. She wanted to do Father Puja to Papa very often. She wanted to garland him, worship his feet. And she did it once or twice. She would take Papa's prasad. She would say Papa was God himself and had the highest reverence for him. But when we noticed her moods, we could feel that everything was not going on properly, mm-hmm. in the right direction. And suddenly one day, she started shouting. Father came and reported to us. She could not get any sleep all night. She was not normal. Papa went to her room. She caught hold of Papa's feet, who was standing just outside the room, leaning on the wall. She caught hold of his feet and started pulling the feet. And it was a dangerous situation. Papa might fall down. Then, watching the situation, I caught her from behind and lifted her bodily, took her to the bed, put her on the bed. She was furious because she was not allowed to worship Papa.
And Papa was pretty, was Papa...
Papa was smiling.
Is that right?
Papa was smiling. He didn't say anything at all.
And he didn't seem worried?
No. He was taking it very coolly. Father was very much excited. And we had to, after that, get a psychiatrist. Mangalore. Psychiatrist said there's nothing seriously wrong. He only wanted some sedatives. And complete rest. Some sedatives were given. And she was expressing very often that she was passing through a period of crucifixion.
So she was using that description even at that time, that's what it felt like to her.
Yes. And it was really a crucifixion. You could understand the state of turmoil she was passing through in her mind. Fortunately, after a few days, everything settled down. She regained her normal self. She could recollect, though not everything, most of the things she had passed through, and said she had passed through a very severe trial and had come out of it successfully by Papa's help. And she could explain later on that she had got a higher state of spiritual attainment.
And was she still asking Papa for confirmation on that too, or was that now not?
Yes, Papa assured her that she was going to be not an ordinary spiritual force in the West. She was going to lead a number of real seekers of truth and would have to do a lot of work. She was very happy to hear all those things. But Papa never assured her that she had attained the highest.
Yes.
She also knew she had to attain something more before they left. She was not very happy when they left because she had to return before getting reaching the highest goal.
Mm, exactly.
Papa and Mataji were both happy that she had got something and she was not going empty-handed. Though they were not happy with certain experiences that she had, apparently unpleasant.
That's right. And really in opposition to Papa too, from what Mother said, that she was thought of Papa at one time as the devil and didn't want anything to do with him. And this is right before she left, or she was still going through those those doubts. And it must have been very difficult to, as disciples of Papa's, to have someone say that.
It was a very difficult time. We could not exactly imagine how Papa was taking it, though he was smiling all the time. He never made a remark,
That's
pleasant or unpleasant. Was just watching it. Might have been helping her from within.
One time he said to her that when she had been going through this, and this is while she was still in India, that Papa had stood at the door and warded off all of the bad forces.
He
told her that. And in her mind, her own master came in and said, "No, he didn't. I did." Now, of course, this is the way masters are. There's some dispute amongst us disciples over who. It's all God, isn't it?
So I'll say. Anyway, we're happy that he came out successful in that ordeal and could lead a very happy and useful life after that for many years.
Yeah, it took her many years to get over, to get through the next few stages.
And we heard that she had a large following in Seattle.
Yes, she did.
After she returned from there, quite a number of young men were listening to her talks daily.
That's right.
Following her teachings.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know exactly the number, but it was in the hundreds. And it included all over the U.S. and Canada.
When she came here again, we were very happy to meet her. Mm. She was blossoming.
Yes.
Sainthood. Mm-hmm. Very happy.
In 1968.
I don't remember the exact year, but it was with Mrs. Ranish.
Yes, that time. Yeah. So that was the time when she was still finalizing, still not through it. Yes. And with Mrs. Rani, that's right. And then the second time, or the third time, really, she came with Mrs. Rani's son.
Yes.
David, very sweet man.
Yes.
Good friend of mine. But you felt that in 78 she had attained the goal because she was relaxed.
Yes.
And in that state of mind.
She had got something substantial.
Mm. Exactly.
And she could guide real aspirants. That we could feel.
She could guide. And that she was a capable guide?
Capable of guiding.
Yes.
Real aspirants. And she could quote from scriptures very easily.
Well, of course, her whole experience was one of going to the script, having an experience, and then finding it in the scriptures and trying to understand the deeper meaning. Do you remember it being a Kundalini experience in 1957, 58, I guess? Do you remember it being where she was very, very hot?
Yes.
And was that accepted here as a Kundalini experience, or was that the only explanation, or was there another one?
That experience, it was, I think a lot of water was poured on her head also, to cool down. That's not necessarily considered a Kundalini experience.
Yes, that's true.
But it was necessary to cool her head.
Her fever down. I think that that was such a traumatic experience for her that all of the doubts associated with it lasted for many years, and that's why it took her so long to come out of it.
Did you ask any of the other friends?
Yes, a few. Sundaram remembers her. And he said that Papa stated that Mother left in a state of, or never made it beyond the state of doubt. And he hadn't known that Mother had continued to write to Papa afterwards, and that the relationship still developed, and that Mother then dropped her doubts about Papa in within 2 years. And at that time, in 1960 or so, the best I can tell, she began seeing Papa as God again, and realized, and that's the way she always taught us. We had these twin branches in our teachings, because Papa was talked about as much as Yogananda, because she saw him as influencing her and teaching her, excuse me, and universalizing her vision. And that also, Papa, if it weren't for Papa, she could never have gone through that experience. That was her feeling at the time, is that he was absolutely essential. And that when she came to India, she didn't know that how important it was for her to be in India and to be with Papa, as it turned out to be. Now, maybe she would never have had that experience in the United States, but if she had, she would have been put in a mental hospital. And she knew that. And so
if the same experience she had in America, she would have been put in a mental hospital.
That is true. Only in India, she claimed. This is her basic teaching. I remember the very first time or so I heard her talk, is that it's only in India at the present time where masters understand this stuff. And it's only in the Eastern teachings.
Yeah.
And it used to be in the early Christian teachings that people could go through less traumatic. She stated to all of us disciples that none of us would go through the Kundalini experiences and the crucifixion experiences. She's using those interchangeably. None of us would go through that to that extent, and that has been true. Many of her disciples have gone through Kundalini experiences at very low levels, and under her control, came through them very well. She's kind of correlated the Christian crucifixion with Kundalini and several stages of it, and so she talks about crucifixion most of the time. But she always talks then again about the East, so she connects the two. Well, I guess it's interesting from our point of view that we saw Mother as having gone through a clear Kundalini experience here in India, and yet over here there's some doubt, and certainly Papa never explained anything, which is, that's news to me. I didn't quite...
That doubt is natural.
Yes.
Those who have not reached that stage are likely to doubt.
That's right.
It's natural. Only saints could understand. Mataji never made a remark.
Is that right? She was at one with Papa, wasn't she? They both sat and watched and knew at what level. Well, there's another aspect. Mother said that the reason that she went through it that way was because she was working out universal karma. Universal karma.
Ah.
And that's why the pain for her was so intense.
Possible.
She also said that her heart started beating on her right side. And that she said Ramana Maharshi had a similar
experience.
That's
what Ramana Maharshi used to say.
And I hadn't heard before, but Sundaram said that that's the psychic heart.
Yeah.
And, excuse me, on the right side.
Right.
And if you feel that, that means that that is developed at any rate, maybe?
That's what Maharshi also used to say.
Whenever that light's on, it's on. Well.
Anything else to say?
Not to
Manjunath is every Sunday, 2,000 people get free rice, half a kilo. So, Swamiji has different variety, whatever available in the local shop or ashram suppliers. So, he brings the samples.
Uncooked rice.
Uncooked?
Rice.
Rice. About four gunny bags full. One gunny bag, how much, Swamiji?
We in our 5 quintals.
5 quintals, rice distributed.
I don't know that yet.
5 quintals is 500 kilos.
Oh, man, is that right?
This one, Swamiji?
Yeah, that one.
Yes.
Is this a long-going tradition on Sunday?
That has been going on for a long time. Mm. Hello. Hello.
Mother tells, I just want to know if you remember any of these details. Mother says, in the book, in the Gospel of Swami Ramdas, you state that Mother asked a question about the evolution, the scriptures being the story of every man's evolution from the human to the divine. And Papa, for some reason, stated very vehemently, you have made him say it. Do you have any idea why that was significant to Papa, yourself?
I don't remember exactly.
But you wrote it down, so you just... Of course, these notes were taken during the day of it happening. And another thing that she said that started her into the experience in reading the Gospel, I thought it was the time where he said, you have made him say it. She did feel a bolt of lightning or a bolt, you know, a electrical shock in her forehead. Mm. But I remember now that it was a time when she was sitting with Papa and he let a long sigh out of his mouth. He went, like that. And that's when she went into these negative experiences that she lost memory from and was, you know, had all the difficulty. So, you don't remember anything like that?
I don't remember. Another thing I remember was Papa patted the father on his back and stood in static meditation for hours together after that.
Just touching him?
Yes. That was in his room. For hours together he sat in meditation. And Mother came and reported afterwards. That's all I remember. It's quite a long time now.
Yes. Oh, I'm sure. But at any rate, those kinds of things are explaining perhaps why she saw Papa as being involved in all of that, and yet he stands dispassionately, and yet he's God's instrument, isn't he? And so, if God was going to work through him, he would do it. You don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but it's a story that Mother always told about you, and that is when she came in 1968 or 78, I don't know which one, but that your death had been predicted by an astrologer. Do you remember anything about that story?
No, I don't.
Because Mother Krishna Bai brought the information forward, and Mother stated that she and Mother Krishna Bai got into an argument. you don't remember that? Okay. Thank you very much for your time, Swamiji. I appreciate your time. I know how valuable it is.
I don't know if I've heard that, but he actually picked Mother up.
Yeah.
And just carried her.
Put her on the bed.
On the bed.
I know, me too. I was really affected by that too.
I was just picturing.
Yeah, I was picturing.
Because, he was there.
Mm-hmm. And he had to do it. But, Papa was in his late 70s at the time, so. Well, mid-70s, so...
it could, yeah.
He was worried about him
falling.
Yeah. Legitimate concern.
How old was Swamiji there?
He was born in 1919. This is 96, so 2070 something himself. Yeah. 77. But I think in better shape than Papa was. Papa had diabetes, and he had been hard on his body.
He looks very young, Swamiji, from when, you know, when we saw him later. Yeah, look how young he looks, yeah.
Yeah, those are, it's important stuff to get into Mother's story, that, to have an eyewitness to what she went through. Now, you know, you don't get someone like Swami Satchitananda, but any saint or Swami of that type of a big organization, you wouldn't say, because he didn't know Mother's state of attainment. But I do know that in 1977, they were very much at one with each other. There was a clear understanding of Mother had attained something, and that's what he was saying at the time. Yeah, he was such a powerful. It's not video, not visual, or not easy to see in the video, but he was, his presence was really amazing. It just takes me back to sitting in front of him, sitting with him. But you look at how attentive he was. He wanted to get the answers right and to think it through. And then you could see him casting his mind back to that time too. He'd close his eyes or he'd look up. Really interesting.
You asked him about the heart on the right.
And
he
couldn't confirm himself, but he said Ramana Maharshi.
Yes, Ramana Maharshi did say that, but no, he didn't
have that experience himself. Yeah.
Or if he knew anything about it, he wasn't gonna.
No, I think I don't know. You know, not everyone goes through all these experiences. So, you know, he could easily have had it if he's. Again, these are things that people go through these experiences and don't even know. It isn't remarkable to them that it's on the right. They've got other things they're dealing with inwardly, but they might be knowledgeable or not. And it's really hard to compare the state of consciousness of these different people and different experiences.
Yeah, his humility will come through.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing I would say, what's that?
I was just going to say it was such a thrill for me to see his eyes, you know, his beautiful smiling eyes. Oh, I've never had that experience before.
Yeah.
It was so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So sweet.
So solicitous of all people who came before him. He was just a perfect host and... But as usual with great saints, it's hard to explain to people what it's like, you know, when you're around David, you know, when you're around Mother, you realize, oh, this is a different ambiance, different aura around them, and you can feel it. Well, let's meditate until around 5 to 10, and then we'll take a 15 or 20 minute break at that time.